Welcome to the Salary Report. Today is May 5th, 2016. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm speaking to you from Hickory Valley, Tennessee. I just got back from a wonderful luncheon in New York City last weekend with Richard Dolan and 50 fantastic subscribers. We had former Salary Report guest Eunice Boston. If you haven't listened to Eunice's interview, Coming Clean, it's one of my favorite. And then Helen Chaitman, who's going to be, will publish her interview 2 weeks from now. She's the lead attorney for the Madoff victims and author of J.P. Madoff, incredible attorney. It was a fascinating discussion. Richard Dolan spoke on false flags. He had spoken at the Club 21 lunch in New York last year on UFO and national security topics and global geopolitics. This time, he shared with us a lot of the research he's doing on his new book on false flags, which should be ready at the end of the year or early 2017. Then we had a great roundtable discussion with each table asking two questions, and then Richard went through all of them after we heard them. And a wonderful sort of round-the-room discussion. I will say this. I think the importance of understanding false flags is absolutely critical to understanding our environment. And so I really look forward to this book. I think it's one that I'm going to recommend highly to all of our subscribers. Anyway, great lunch in New York at Club 21. Sunday brunch coming up on May 15th in Sydney, Australia. I'll be flying out to Australia this Wednesday and there for 2 weeks. And I'm really looking forward to that back on the 24th. Our theme tonight is livestock management. It was inspired by a discussion we had with Richard Dolan at Club 21. When he first came in, I was walking around the room introducing him to different subscribers, and he mentioned that doing the research on false flags had changed his paradigm. And then I didn't get a chance to drill down with him and find out what that meant. So during the Q&A, I said, Richard, you said that doing this research had really changed your paradigm. Tell us about that. What have you learned from the research, and how has it changed your paradigm? Remember, this is after giving his whole speech on false flags, and he said he tried to explain it, and he was sort of struggling for words about helping get into the psychology of the people who were really governing the planet. And I said, so you're learning how to look at the farmer's livestock management from the point of view of the chicken. And he looked at me and he said, yes, that's exactly right. And it's an analogy I've used a lot. In fact, it was interesting when I first got to know Franklin Sanders and started to read different things he recommended to understand livestock management, because I was interested in agriculture and even having livestock here on my place. I really began to understand that there was a lot of the management and manipulation techniques that really could be explained by livestock management. But I think that it's very disturbing to go into false flags and to understand the freedom with which the leadership practices things like slavery or literally murder or war. But the reality is, if you can go through the process of understanding it and seeing how it works, you can get much better at ducking. And as you know, one of my goals for the Salary Report is to dramatically improve your immune system to sort of geopolitical toxicity and risk as to what's going on. There's a game of musical chairs going on as the weaker players get squeezed out. We're seeing it, of course, this last week with Puerto Rico finally declaring a formal default. There's going to be more defaults to come from Puerto Rico, is my expectation. We see different brokerage firms tightening up their money market or cash management. I put up one article from Zero Hedge regarding Schwab announcing that they were going to do bank sweeps into their FDIC-insured bank holdings for money up to a certain amount and then into government security money markets otherwise. So you're seeing a real effort to protect against a liquidity event. Make sure, if you haven't taken a look at the first quarter wrap-up, the lead theme is where to stash your cash in 2016. And it has a good listing of sort of what-if scenarios of things you want to be prepared for. And I really recommend that as a great tool to use. Go through that presentation to make sure that you've got your cash management you've tightened down the hatches for the process we're going to go into now. And I shouldn't say we're going to go into, we're in it now. The most telling thing, though, is the Fed has proposed a rule that imposes so-called stays in new, and they're even trying to do retroactive into financial instruments, particularly derivatives, that would prevent counterparties from pulling collateral from a failed bank. And the goal is to head off and prevent a contagion that spreads through the markets. It's going to make it more uncomfortable for many of the different counterparties doing business with the big banks, but the whole goal is to make a bail-in feasible if the regulators need to do it. I'm not as concerned about bail-ins as some people in the markets, but the reality is when you come into a slowdown on the debt growth model, you're going to have musical chair and chairs are going to get pulled. There's very few mentions, certainly in the campaign, of the serious problems we're facing, both in terms of pension funds and what low interest rates have been doing to them, or talk about what automation is going to do to employment. If anything, you listen to campaign promises that go the other way and paint a very different picture. There are a lot of mentions, however, of the fact that there are no mentions of these things, certainly in the internet press. And so you wonder what's going to happen in 2017, but there's definitely going to be have to be a major change in the discussion, and it may be very shocking to some people when it comes. Okay, let's look at the markets. Keep an eye. The U.S. dollar index has been the U.S. dollar has been weak. We hit went down to the 92 line, but didn't break it. Bounced back up, and that's a critical line. We seem to be just going sideways in this 92 to 100 range. The US dollar index now down 5% for the year. Keep an eye on the euro coming into the UK vote on June 23rd on Brexit. That may give a little strength to the dollar. But there's no doubt we're seeing real weakness in the dollar. If you look at bonds are the performers so far this year, other than precious metals. The 20-year ETF Treasury up 9.52%, it's a little bit back up this week. The bond aggregate ETF now up 3.72% for the year. Surprise, this one just floors me. The high yield ETF now up 4.57% this year, which is a major recovery from where the high yield market was as a result of problems in the oil patch. And that's a real improvement. My guess is very much in part with as a result of the price of oil coming back around. S&P now up 1.06% for the year. The German market down 2.4%. China down 8.47%. Developed markets, not including North America, down 2.55%. Emerging markets now up 1.83%. They've backed way off from where they were. Gold and silver continue to be the star performers, but I don't trust them. I just think they're still in a state that's very volatile, and I question whether we've proved a bottom yet. The gold up 20%, 20.31%, and silver up 25.17%. For people hungry for yield, it's very attractive, but you want to be careful. Oil down 7.38% for the year. That's a great improvement from where we've been. And then the commodities index up 1.51%. If you go over to FinViz and look at the performance of the futures, a lot of the commodities are now back in the green. And that's a great relief, particularly for the farmers coming into the summer harvest season. McKinsey Global Institute had a very important study that I posted up in Top Picks called the title is Why Investors May Need to Lower Their Sights. And basically, what they're describing, grossly oversimplified, is going forward, there's no such thing as risk-free returns. There's only risk returns, and in fact, those returns are going to be low. They you know, which essentially means you're going to have to stay in hard assets and equities, but you're not going to get a lot of return for it. And you're going to have to live with a great deal of variability. And I think that that is probably the case, or certainly why we just go through this digestion period. The U.S. presidential campaign, the India primary was Tuesday, and Trump won the Republican side going away, as they would call it in the horse races. And as a result, Cruz and Kasich have now dropped from the race, leaving Trump as the likely nominee at the Republican Party convention. That means he will probably go in with all the delegates he needs to win on the first vote. And the Republican Party is now digesting the reality of this. And that conversation is far from over. Sanders won in Indiana, and so continues in the race. He's doing remarkably well. However, his problem is the superdelegates. If the superdelegates stick with Clinton, then Clinton will be the nominee, which leaves us in a situation where we have two nominees in the major parties who have extremely high negatives and really cannot command the respect of the country, at least at this point. Whether Trump can, as a newcomer, can turn those negatives around remains to be seen. I'm not sure if all the entrainment in the world will turn Clinton's negatives around. I think too many people have lost faith in the system. That's bad news for the markets. The big question to me is, what does Richmond Valentine want? If you haven't read my commentary called the Kingsman campaign, Richmond Valentine is a character from the movie Kingsman, and he basically has a machine that can manipulate people's behavior and moods. And I think a lot of what's happening in the campaign is driven a lot more by Richmond Valentine's machine than by the natural response of the crowds to the different candidates. Anyway, no matter who wins, what's going to happen is we're going to see a lot of re-engineering at the top. You're going to see the political elites re-engineered. The reality is now that the financial coup is over and with deflation happening, you have a change in generations, but you also need a lot less people to put a pretty face on what's going on. We're part of this process is we're now in a place where people, you know, particularly Trump, you don't need a lot of pretty faces to pretend one thing when you're doing another. So, you're seeing signs of that reengineering all over, and it's fascinating. I keep asking the question, what in the world is happening to Team Bush? It's surprising to see Team Bush taking as many punches as it is. I'm not used to seeing that. First, we had Jeb spend an enormous amount of money and get no place in the primaries. Then I put up a commentary last week, the Theranos, the blood testing company out of Silicon Valley, is under real pressure from the Department of Justice. It looks very ugly. And if you look at their board, it's some of the luminaries of the Mandalay camp at the Bohemian Grove, but certainly very important members of Team Bush. And then we just saw the Halliburton and Baker Hughes deal busted by antitrust concerns of the Department of Justice. So it's almost as though George H.W. Bush and Cheney aren't around to engineer everything for everybody. So it's a very fluid situation now. The opportunity for the rest of us is it's a great time between now and the fall to bring transparency to issues. You know, let's get the genie out of the bottle in a way that it can't go back in. And the great, wonderful, exciting example of this is what Robert De Niro has managed to achieve with the controversy around the documentary Vaxxed at the Tribeca Film Festival, theaters all over the country picking it up, and then Robert De Niro getting and doing a series of marvelous interviews on mainstream media saying, look, we need to look at these documentaries and we need to talk about it. His son is autistic and he was hero of the Soleri Hero of the Week 2 weeks ago on the Soleri Report, and he just keeps being a great hero. I did a review of one of the documentaries he recommended in one of the interviews I posted on the website, and it's called Trace Amounts, and I cannot recommend it to you enough. It's about what mercury poisoning is doing and its connection to autism. and that includes the mercury in preservative thimerosal, which is used in vaccines. And it was funny, during the interview, and you'll see it's posted in Top Picks back on the Salieri Report if you go back a few weeks, the commentator's giving De Niro a hard time, and De Niro says, look, no. He said we have a problem with toxic vaccines, and it's a real problem, and you can't just poo-poo it. And we need to look at this, and we need to talk about it, and we need to have a conversation. And that's when he recommended that we, not only should we see Vax, we should see this documentary, Trace Amounts. At the bottom of the commentary or the review of Trace Amounts, I put a link to a collection cup we're running, trying to identify the best sources on vaccine risks. What we're looking for, what are the documentaries and books and other materials that if you wanted to warn a family member, so say you have a child who has, who's in charge of the medical and health process for your grandchildren, and you want to introduce them to the materials that will remind them that the current schedules have become very heavy of vaccines, and there are real dangers. The autism rates are skyrocketing, and the documentary Trace Amounts gives a great description of how it's been happening. So I really recommend to you. It's a very important thing to understand for health reasons. Okay, Ask Catherine. Thank you for all the great links you've been sending. Lots of questions tonight. Let me tear through them. Thank you. I love your website. I just finished listening to the update on Global Spring with Clifford Carnicom, and you mentioned the clarity of mental focus after you'd done a heavy mental detox. Please tell me what you did and which products you found to be most effective to achieve the clarity. Go back in the archive. We did a detox with Dr. Laura Thompson. It's as timely today as it was then. And it's got all the material in it. Scheduled for June, I've asked Dr. Thompson to come back to talk about how to detox from toxic vaccines. Let's say you've got mercury poisoning from the thimerosal in a vaccine or other problems from toxic vaccines. What do you do? How do you heal yourself? Hello, Catherine. And then I got a detailed question about investment advice, which I'm not going to read. I don't give investment advice on the Salieri Report. I think that's... first of all, before anybody gives you investment advice, they need to know a lot of detail about you. And so this just is not the venue. You want somebody who can really help you, after looking at your unique situation. One of the things you recommended was that I said, get out of the stock market. No, that's not what I've said. I think increasingly I've been moving to hedged positions where I stay in equities to get the dividends, but instead I'm in a situation where managers are writing hedges so that if we get a big down, we're protected. Okay. Dear Catherine and Dr. Farrell, thank you for your recent wrap-up discussion. You provide top-level education we desperately need. What I look for is examining in detail what Mr. Global is up to is the vital first step. Recommendations to withdraw from his grasping parasitic system must follow, as you consistently encourage us to do. However, what are people withdrawing into? In other words, what is the nature of the new system, the new institutions and relationships we have to create to replace the corrupt ones we once took for granted, et cetera, et cetera. Dr. Farrell longs for a return to teaching the classics of Western culture. He misses the values of civility and balanced discussion. I recall that Catherine sees the small community as the garden where aware and compassionate people can create solutions that work for the community, not for the big banks. And what is the new mindset, the new philosophy or worldview that will replace the mindset that got us into this mess? Can you describe it? We can easily describe the one, he goes on. What do we want the new world to look like? So I would encourage you to read, I have a series of pieces on the Salieri investment strategy, the Salieri model, but let me make it really simple. Essentially, we need two things. We need to practice the golden rule, not just with respect to our personal behavior, but with respect to where we implement our time and money and where we invest our time and money. So, you know, there are many people who walk around trying to practice the golden rule, but then they're busy investing their money in Monsanto. And so they're supporting non-golden rule behavior. And that includes we all pay taxes into a machinery that is not obeying the laws with respect to how that money is supposed to be managed and spent. And one of the things I've talked about is the importance, if we could get a critical mass of people to look at reengineering that money so that we could assert jurisdiction of the law with respect to the management of the, as you know, governmental funds. To do all of that, one of the things you need is transparency, because there's no way I can practice the golden rule unless I can understand what's happening. And that's why I keep beating the drum of transparency, 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 because I can't shun somebody unless I really see what they're up, you know, that they're up to no good. And it's, you know, right now in our society, if anything, we're shunning the good guys and admiring the bad guys. And that is a very negative feedback loop. One of my favorite stories of explaining the Solari model to people was I was in a Bible class and I had a great teacher who asked me what the Solari model was. And I explained it. She looked at me and she said, "Oh, you're making it much too complicated. It's in Leviticus. It says we have to take care of the land. We have to take care of ourselves and we have to take care of each other. That's it." I thought that was a great description. Okay. Hi, Catherine. You speak of Global 3.0, but what does that really mean when it comes to identifying companies to invest in? If you take a look at the 2014 third quarter wrap-up, I try and go through the different industry sectors so that you can see where are the industries that the growth is happening. But you also want to look at companies that are not only great at building that technology, but also who are integrating it into their operation. I'm always using Starbucks as an example. Starbucks is a company that's very high touch and looks very 2.0. But if you look at how they've integrated mobile payment systems and technology and use 3.0 technology, it's very, very masterful. Now, the reality is a company can be great at 3.0 and be headed for great success in 3.0. But that doesn't mean at a particular time that it's the right time to buy it or the right time to sell it. So you have to be very careful. Just because a company is in a good primary trend in Global 3.0, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a good investment that day. So just remember, there's a whole lot more to picking out investments than knowing that they are in Global 3.0 or good with Global 3.0 technology. But I think what you can say is it's always important to go with a primary trend. And the rising of Global 3.0 is a primary trend. It's one of the reasons in the annual wrap-up, we did a section on space-based companies. And we've been working in and revising that list. And we're in the process of trying to identify the Asian companies. We have American and European. Now we're trying to add Asia. So we're going to periodically republish the that list as it gets longer. So that's just all the companies identified as being involved in space, which I think is a very important part of Global 3.0. That does not mean that they're necessarily good investments, as I said, particularly at today's price. Hi, Catherine. Extremely grateful to finally have been able to subscribe to Solari, as I have exhausted all of the free content interviews available on the internet. Oh my, that's a lot of stuff. I've recently come across a movement, if I can call it that, something called time banking. I have not been aware of this until listening to OYM Radio, who are in Ireland. I see this as a good thing for communities to exchange time for service in an equal exchange. However, what do you think of this concept beyond a crisis situation in order to barter time and services, not used as a means of barter of products? I think time banks are an excellent idea. The challenge is on implementation. They've been tried in a lot of places and haven't gotten real energy behind them. So the question is, you know, are you in a place and do you have the best practices to really get it to take hold? There's no doubt that you see enormous sub-optimization within the economy where you can't create local currencies and you're dependent on centralized currencies that don't have integrity. And so you know, if you could do time banking, if you could do barter, if you could do local currencies, you'd get an enormous increase in economic activity, particularly if privacy could be, conditions of privacy and markets could be created. So I think time banking is a great idea. The question is you want to make sure you don't get involved in a lousy implementation because you can waste an awful lot of time. One of the problems, I suspect, if you look at where I've seen time banking fail, I think part of the problem is you're up against the smartphones and entrainment. So unless it's going through Facebook, the powers that be are not going to support it, and it's going to run into opposition. Here's the website I looked at from the interview I listened to. Thank you for that. I'll take a look. Thanks again for all you do. We've learned so much from all your hard work, dedication to a better world and humanity. Hi, Catherine. I recently subscribed to the Solera Report. I was wondering if there are any financial advisors you recommend who know how to navigate the investment world during these difficult times. We have a Building Wealth collection, and I go through some of the people who do newsletters or courses, for example, on budgeting. I love Dave Ramsey. And I go through some of the people who provide that kind of material. But we don't recommend specific financial advisors. Again, that's providing investment or financial advice, and I don't do that on the Solera Report. Hi, Catherine. I was listening to your interviews with Adam Trombley, and both of you mentioned that you were revitalized and restored by using the QRS machine. I was thinking of purchasing it for myself and close family members. Do you still use the machine, and do you still recommend it? Yes, I still use it. There is a commentary on the website about QRS. If you put QRS in the search box, you'll get it. I would note that Dr. Sam Higgum, who wrote the Dirty Electricity book, is extremely critical and doesn't really think it's safe. So it's, there are two sides to this, and you should research it and make sure it's something you want to try, but I use one regularly. Hi, Catherine. Ted Bauman writes below that something that makes me eager for your opinion on his predictions, how much is fear porn? Thanks. I don't know Bauman's work. I read what you sent. He's basically engaging in prediction and prophecy, and I just don't speculate on prophecy. I think prophecy is a trap that is hugely unproductive. The future is unknowable. What I recommend again and again and again is to do scenario design. So paint a variety of different probable or possible pictures and develop a plan on how you're going to be successful in that future. And what will tell you if we're going into that future as opposed to the other futures. But I think it is a big mistake to get into the business of trying to predict the future and trying to pick out the people who are predicting different futures and proving them right. It's just all enormous. It's very unproductive, and it's a lot of it is fear porn. So my attitude is I have some old audio seminars that on investment strategy that sort of describe how scenario design works. But I think you basically want to be looking for opportunities as opposed to looking for predictions, because the future is something we invent. It's not something we can predict. And I just think it's a terrible trap. So you need to be attracting opportunities and real power, and you're not going to do that by spending time engaging with prophets. Our hero today is, this week, is David Talbot, who is the investigative reporter who wrote The Devil's Chessboard. He is our interview this week. He is a brilliant and capable investigative reporter. This is a very serious piece of history. He's written a biography of Alan Dulles, but through the window of Dulles's life, he has painted a picture of the U.S. establishment from World War II into the 60s, and he has absolutely done, I think, as fine a job as has been done on describing how the assassination of John Kennedy was organized and how the cover-up was organized. And he lays the assassination clearly at the feet of Alan Dulles, as if anybody is project manager, with the help of resources at the CIA, probably with the help of the New York banks and law firms, most notably Sullivan and Cromwell, which was the Dulles brothers' firm. He pulls in Douglas Dillon, then Secretary of the Treasury and head of the Dillon Trust that for many decades owned Dillon Reed, where I worked, including when I first got there. And he ties Dylan as the key liaison to the Rockefellers. And when you read the facts as he lays them out, you realize, oh, the Rockefellers probably chaired the meeting that made the decision. And of course, you've also got the FBI and the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Needless to say, you've got the entire military industrial complex. And so you finish the devil's chessboard, and what you realize, oh, the creme de la creme of the establishment killed Kennedy, which of course everybody knew. If you look at how the assassination and the cover-up worked, it's the only logical explanation of who could have pulled off all the different aspects and pieces. It's interesting. I gave the book to a very important ally. I asked him to read it, and I spoke to him after he finished, and he said, I'll never look at the world the same. And I said, wait a minute, the establishment killed Kennedy. And he said, it's one thing to know it, it's another thing to read the facts. And it's remarkable that Talbot has been able to organize this and publish it through HarperCollins, first-rate publisher owned by Fox. I can't tell you how many times when I see something come out, a movie or a book, and I think, how can this get out? How is this being allowed to happen? And I trace it back, and there's Rupert Murdoch. You sort of wonder if he hasn't decided that, as his legacy, he's gonna out a lot of people and things. One of the story parts of the story that has never completely been told is what was their point of view? And Talbot does a pretty good job of getting into some of that, but he doesn't get into the whole aspect of the hidden system of finance that came out of World War II and the black budget and that whole aspect. And I'd love to get Talbot and Farrell and Dolan and all of us in a room and see if we couldn't figure out a lot more. When you look at the evidence that he lays out, it's clear that that you had a model that the world was operating on, particularly in the Cold War, and every time you turned around, Kennedy was changing the model, and so he was hiccuping all the different players around the entire model, whether it was the financial interests or the military operations or the intelligence operations, and on and on and on. He made many different decisions over the period of his presidency that caused literally the national security establishment to sort of gather and agree to do this. But you wonder, going back there, what were the risks that they were dealing with, and why couldn't they find a third way? You almost wonder what, if there wasn't just a terrible another failure of imagination where they couldn't figure out a way to come to terms with Kennedy in a way that we could solve the model problem without the assassination, because I think from the assassination on, it's had a devastating impact on the country and the governance system. And we've never, the deep state has evolved from here and literally gone into sort of an out of control position. So I think it is of great importance that we finally come to some understanding of the assassination and why it happened. And this is an absolutely fantastic contribution to doing so. So I recommend this interview to you tremendously, and I recommend the book, The Devil's Chessboard. As our movie, I wanted to discuss The Good Shepherd, a wonderful movie made by Robert De Niro. Matt Damon stars as a senior CIA officer, and it's a fictional account of the birth and growth of CIA counterintelligence. Starts before the war with the predecessor groups, intelligence groups, and then goes into the creation and growth of the CIA. And it really takes you into the culture and the mentality of the people who fostered the covert side of our world. Skull and Bone Society, which is a secret society at Yale, plays a very critical part, and you really see the CIA and Skull and Bones as being one and the same. They don't really bring in Wall Street, but if you had CIA and Skull and Bones on Wall Street, you would have the nexus. Skull and Bones is famous. George H.W. Bush being a member, John Kerry, So a lot of skull and bones folks in the leadership throughout the last through many, many decades. One of the things the movie makes clear is that it's not so easy to run the unipolar or the multipolar world. There is a absolutely brilliant scene. It's one of my favorite scenes ever in the movies to explain the nature of America and geopolitics. It's played brilliantly by Joe Pesci and Matt Damon. Matt Damon, again, is the CIA, senior CIA officer who goes to Miami to see presumably a mobster who played by Pesci. And let me just read it to you. The Pesci character says, "Let me ask you something. We Italians, we got our families and we got the church. The Irish, they have the homeland. Jews, their tradition. Even the blacks, they got their music. What about you people, Mr. Wilson? What do you have?" And the Matt Damon character named Edward Wilson says, "The United States of America, the rest of you are just visiting." Anyway, it is their point of view, and it takes me back to what I talked about with our theme of livestock management. Their point of view is that most of us are visitors, or rather livestock, and it's as if we have become as alien species to each other. And one of the things you understand by going into false flags, if a group of people feel empowered to do 9/11 or school shootings, it means they literally look at the general population the way a farmer looks at a herd of cattle or the chickens in the barnyard. So there is an extreme alienation we've achieved. And one of the most important things to thinking about real solutions is how do you reduce that level of alienation we have between each other? And part of it gets down to what are the risks that they're managing. Recently, there was an article that said that former CIA Director George H.W. Bush was quoted as saying, "Americans can't handle the truth." And I absolutely believe that the leadership feels that. And I disagree, and I think all solutions require transparency. And that's, so the question is, how can we bring transparency to the truth in a way that encourages reconciliation and reduces the risks that the leadership is managing? Okay, so David Talbot, the Good Shepherd, these are tools to really deeply see the creation of the deep state in America, which is the real governance system. The deep state's in control. Whoever wins the election, they'll be doing what the deep state tells them. And if they don't do what the deep state tells them, I assure you the same thing that happened to President Kennedy will happen to them. So next week, John Rappaport is back with us for Vaxxed and Other Great Stories of Suppression. After watching what happened with Vaxxed, I said, we need to talk about all the different, the extent of suppression in this society, how it works, how it happens, and point out the extraordinary suppression that we're all dealing in. John and I have had a great conversation. And that will run next week. Then we publish J.P. Madoff with Helen Chapman, lead attorney for the Madoff victims. And then on May 26th, I'll be back as soon as I get back from Australia for Precious Metals Market Report with Franklin Sanders. And Franklin and I will battle around about whether or not we found a bottom. It would be wonderful if we have. Wonderful if we have. So until next week with John Rappaport. Please remember, don't worry about whether there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.